Welcome to Books and Beyond with your hosts, Karen and Louisa. Join us for half an hour of information, entertainment, reading recommendations, and beyond. Brought to you by Auckland Libraries.
I know this girl, and she works in a library, yeah, standing there behind
me. Kia ora, everyone. Today I'm here with Renee Orr, who's Heritage Programs and Outreach Developer, part of our Heritage and Research team at Auckland Libraries. Renee's based at Sir George Grey Special Collections, and she's here to talk to us about a very exciting event coming up. Hello, Renee. Welcome.
Kia ora.
So what is this exciting event? I might let you just take it right away. Let's let you announce what exciting event is coming up in Auckland, in New Zealand.
Well, this year we are celebrating 125 years of women's suffrage in Aotearoa. And one of the key dates in this anniversary is the 19th of September, which is Suffrage Day.
So this was the day that
New Zealand became the first self-governing country in the world to grant women the vote. And in most other democracies, including Britain and the United States, women did not get that right until after the First World War.
Yeah, and in some monarchies, such as the one where I used to live, women didn't get the right until after the Second World War when the monarchy tumbled. So that was Italy.
Outrageous.
Yeah, outrageous, really.
So New Zealand women voted for the first time in a general election on the 28th of November 1893. And that achievement was the result of years of effort by suffrage campaigners led by Kate Sheppard. And that's what we're celebrating this year.
So Kate Sheppard is, for those of you who've been to the suffragette mural in, is it Kitchener Square? What's the name of that square?
It's Te Haohene Place.
Oh, is it?
On Lawn Street, yeah.
There's Kitchener in there somewhere.
It used to be called Khartoum Place.
Oh, Khartoum! Right.
It's been renamed. Yeah,
so Kate Sheppard is one of those four or five, they are stalwart figures of the women's struggle that we all pay homage to.
You also may know her from the $10 note.
Yes. So Kate Sheppard and her cohort, what did they do in those build up to suffrage?
They've actually been campaigning for a long, long time. So the movement towards women's suffrage had sort of really started in New Zealand around about 1869. So women had been writing letters, signing petitions, and sort of lobbying their supporters in Parliament for a long, long time. But when Kate Sheppard kind of got involved, things really took off, and she organised three monster petitions to Parliament, asking for the right to vote for women, and that really kind of came to a head in 1893, which was when the big petition was signed and presented, and when Parliament passed the law.
Mm. And this is the famous big petition that she glued all the pages together on a broomstick or something, wasn't it?
That's right. Yeah. So we've actually got a sheet here from the petition, which I can discuss, which is a sheet from the petition itself. But yeah, famously, what the campaigners did was they printed up all the petition sheets and sent them to all different parts of the country, and then the local franchise groups collected signatures. So they went door knocking. You can see pages of the petition, which are all from one particular street in Ponsonby, for instance. They took them to workplaces and to social occasions, you know, church and so on. And then what they did was they sent them all back to Kate Sheppard, and she famously, on her kitchen table, glued them all together end to end, rolled them around a broom handle, and created this gigantic kind of long roll. When they unrolled it in Parliament as this kind of dramatic gesture, it measured 274 metres long.
Wow. Mm.
It's quite impressive, yeah.
Yeah, it is. And you have to wonder about the choice of the broom handle. Could have possibly also been a rolling pin. It just kind of does have a sort of a, the broom handle as opposed to the rolling pin does kind of convey that crone women as witches kind of, with extra power.
I kind of imagine it with the broom bit actually cut off, like as if it's just a kind of a wooden stick, but I'm not really sure. And I Yeah. Don't know whether the handle itself survives.
This is actually a good moment to tell everyone out there that when Renee says we have a page here from the petition, don't worry, we don't actually have a real page from the petition. We haven't brought out to the to the Planet FM studios a page of this historic document, which is carefully in custody in
So it's actually cared for by Archives New Zealand, but you can see it if you're in Wellington or if you're visiting Wellington. You can see the actual petition itself on display in the He Tohu exhibition, which is now permanently at the National Library. And yeah, I visited a few weeks ago and it's really beautiful to see it, on display there.
Yeah, one of those breathtaking moments where you're just really encountering history.
Uh-huh.
And what we have here, I'm pretty breathtaking myself. It's not the, as I said, it's not the real petition, but we have a digitized copy here. And we've got the prayer up at the top. So what's the prayer?
So the prayer is the basically the things that the women of New Zealand are asking for. So it it goes through a number of kind of different statements, and it ends at the very bottom, and your petitioners, as in duty bound, will ever pray, etc. So it's a kind of formality that people would kind of sign off in that kind of 19th century way.
Yeah, so the very first line is, the petition of the undersigned women of the age of 21 years and upwards, resident in the colony of New Zealand, humbly showeth that large numbers of women in the colony have for several years petitioned Parliament to extend the franchise to them. And then it goes through four more points. And then we've got a whole pack of signatures all from Birkenhead.
Pretty much. There's a couple from Ponsonby interspersed as well. But when we were choosing items for our current Heritage Collections exhibition at the Central City Library, we chose this particular sheet of the petition, partly because it does actually contain those clauses, the prayer at the top, whereas most of the sheets of the petition have those trimmed off.
Right.
So Kate Shepherd excised them when she glued it all together. So what it gives is 20 signatures, and it shows that there were women in the community of Birkenhead who were all present and all willing to sign the petition to ask for this right to vote.
Had possibly organized a tea party where they all joined together and got a petition and signed it.
It's fascinating to think about. We really don't really know. And that's sort of one of the intriguing things about the petition in general, is that we don't actually know the identities of most of these women who signed. It's intriguing to think about who they were, what their backgrounds were, and we know that they did have a variety of different backgrounds. So on this page in particular, we do know who the identities of two of these women. One is Annabella Hammond, and she's quite a wealthy woman from a well-to-do family who lived in Birkenhead, and another woman lived in Ponsonby, and she was a school teacher. So,
So if somebody knew that their great-grandmother signed the petition, they could look at the digitized copy and look through all the signatures.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's actually a searchable database on the New Zealand History website where you can go and put in any name and see if anything comes back for someone from your family. You can also contribute your own biographies, and archives are actually undertaking a sort of a crowdsourcing project at the moment for more biographies to be added to the database.
It's always good when recurrences like this come around, because there's always new activity. It's an incubator a bit for a new activity. And just because I can see there's a nice stack of material here. But so in the end, how many women signed this petition?
So this particular petition contains around 25,000 signatures, and that's around almost a quarter of the population of adult women in New Zealand at that time. There were also 12 smaller petitions which were also presented to Parliament at the same time. Unfortunately, they haven't survived through the archives of time. And interestingly enough, there was a petition created by a woman in Birkenhead, and that, not Birkenhead, Devonport, and that petition actually contained 2,000 signatures, which is almost as many of Auckland signatures as we have on this monster petition.
Yeah.
So 2,000 signatures.
I'm
lost
so
a time.
Impressed with this encyclopedic knowledge. I'm impressed with your pile of things, so let's quickly move on to the next one.
Sure.
We have something here, looks like a letter.
Yep, this is a letter. So this is a letter written by someone called Amy Doldy. And Amy Doldy was president of the Auckland branch of the Women's Franchise League, which is the local organisation who led the campaign for the vote in Auckland and would have been the driving force behind going around and collecting signatures for the petition. And she's writing to Sir George Grey, who of course is the founder of Auckland Libraries with his original donation to the city. And she's writing at the day after the electoral bill was passed into law, so on the 20th of September. And it's really a letter of gratitude, really, as one good campaigner does, writing to your supporters the day after your victory has been assured to shore up their support for your next venture. And so
these women were very smart.
Very savvy.
They were very savvy. Yeah,
they're very savvy campaigners. And so she basically writes that the meeting of the Women's Franchise League has passed a resolution that they thank Sir George Grey for his support, and that they would be greatly delighted to see him at a meeting Friday afternoon next to celebrate our victory. So it's a friendly letter written the day after their great victory.
I'm presuming the meeting, I'm thinking of a tea party, but I may be wrong.
Well, I assume a tea party as well. And it does say that it's a place to be advertised. So it may have been a semi-public event, but yeah, I'm not too sure.
Might have been at a hall. So I really love, Renee, I have to put this in there, I love the way that Sir George Grey, you identified him as the founder of Auckland Libraries with his donation and skipped over being governor of New Zealand. What's more important than here for us librarians?
That's right.
Okay, fantastic. And now here's our next what are we calling this? Collector's item?
Our next item? Yeah, our next item, yeah.
So this is Grey Lynn. That's me, Electors of Grey Lynn.
That's right. These things are all local. So this, we're sort of fast forwarding a little bit here to 1919, but still sticking with this theme of women's suffrage, because this item is a poster for the election campaign of Miss Ellen Melville. And you may know that name because Ellen Melville is the name given to the Ellen Melville Centre, which is a community centre in Auckland City. And Ellen Melville herself was the first woman councillor to be elected in Aotearoa. So she was elected to the Auckland City Council in 1913. But this is her first campaign for Parliament to be to stand as an MP in the electorate of Grey Lynn.
Was this a successful campaign?
Unfortunately, no.
Oh, but she had later.
No, she never made it into Parliament, but she did stand in every single election she could until she died. So she kept on trying. So she stood in this election, 1919, the very first election in which women were able to stand for Parliament. So even though women were granted the vote in 1893, it wasn't until 1919 that they were able to actually stand for Parliament themselves.
So she was, however, the first... She had a first of a councillor.
She was the first councillor,
So
she
in Auckland.
In Auckland City, And she served on the Auckland City Council again until she died from 1913 to 1946.
So what does her poster say? Let's have a look at it.
Yeah, well, so it says, Electors of Grey Lynn, some reasons why you should support the woman candidate, Miss Ellen Melville. The first reason is that she is a young Aucklander.
That's a good reason for me.
Yeah, I'm not too sure what that would have meant to the voters
Jacinda,
of the time.
What does it mean to us about Jacinda
or
young Aucklander?
Or Chloe Swarbrick's campaign for the mayoralty?
Absolutely.
She also states that she was a solicitor of 10 years standing, and she was in fact the second New Zealand woman to be admitted to the bar, and also the second woman to establish herself in sole practice. And so she had a number of firsts, really. She was a remarkable person. She talks about her experience on the Auckland City Council because she'd been there for 6 years already. And then right down at the bottom it says, vote for Miss Melville and make her the first woman MP.
Fantastic. And we would like to say that Miss E. Melville is certainly a name in the centre of Auckland as in talking about vitalizing some of this history and some of the community spaces in Central Auckland. The Ellen Melville Hall is, it's not called Ellen Melville
Hall. It's called the Ellen Melville Centre, but yeah, there's so many great things going on there.
I hope Auckland Council doesn't close down my show because I keep getting the details wrong. My heart's in the right place.
Do I have time to tell you a story about how we acquired this item?
Certainly.
Yeah. So there's actually an interesting story about how this poster came into the Auckland Library collection. It's part of a scrapbook, and there are two scrapbooks actually, and one scrapbook relates to this 1919 election campaign. Uh-huh. So it's kind of full of, you know, pamphlets and letters and telegrams and things. And they were donated to the library by a couple from Australia who brought them over in their luggage when they were visiting family on the North Shore. According to the donor who donated them to the library, her late father-in-law found them in a dump, possibly in Littleton, and when they were clearing out his house after his death, they thought they might have some value to a library. So we have this remarkable item, this remarkable scrapbook that was very nearly lost and put in the rubbish dump had it not been found by somebody and thought worth saving. And then his daughter-in-law offered it to us at the library. Yeah. So we're so fortunate that it survived.
The importance of libraries having the reputation, if you don't know what to do with this item, but it looks valuable and it looks old and it looks worth keeping, try your library.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Fantastic. So here's a nice brightly coloured, our first brightly coloured item has come to the fore now, I see. What is this?
Absolutely. So now we're in the 1980s. We've got some colour. We've got this beautiful bright yellow screen printed poster, which is all sort of, beautifully kind of illustrated, the lettering. And it says, "Women, help, we're broke. We're having a fundraising party for the Women's Health Centre at 63 Ponsonby Road." And this is from the collection of the Auckland Women's Centre, which is one of the archival collections we have in the library. And it's what it says. It's a fundraising party poster for the Women's Health Centre. And this was kind of a key service that was offered by the Women's Centre on Ponsonby Road. The Women's Health Centre ran woman-friendly services, so you could go and kind of see a woman-friendly doctor or discuss your health issues.
Kids welcome, I see it says
kids
here.
Welcome, yeah. But it is women only.
Yeah.
So
male kids were...
I think male kids were welcome.
It was a point of discussion at the time. I remember the women's only spaces, like how young, how old could a male be before the male was out?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
This is the language on this is just so great. So I want to tell everyone this is like really bright red and green, and there's little flowers designed on it and all kinds of little female symbols and some food, but a plate won't go amiss. Find out what's available at the WHC.
That's right. A donation of $2 would help.
It's really great socialism here. It's from the ground up. Wonderful. So here's our next one. This is actually not a hand-drawn poster, but this is a printed manuscript. I can see, well, not manuscript, it's printed item.
Yeah, so it's from a manuscript collection. It's it's an issue of Broadsheet magazine. Some people may remember Broadsheet. It ran for 25 years, ceased publication in 1997. And it's from our manuscript collection of the Broadsheet Collective. So the Broadsheet Collective were the group of women that that published this magazine. It was started by a group of women who had been involved in the consciousness raising group on women's liberation, and this particular issue is from October 1982, and it features an amazing Gil Hanley photograph on the front cover, featuring Donna Awatere and Rebecca Evans. So if you know Gil Hanley's work, she was famous social documenter all throughout the 1980s. She took many photographs that you'll probably recognise.
Yeah. Well, still now, I've seen Gil at some of the, I can remember a stop work meeting in Otay Square. Gil was there photographing. Can't remember exactly what was the occasion that we were, was similar to the teacher strike that's just been held, but it was a few years before that. And Gil was there in the front line photographing, yeah.
Yeah, so her photographs are right through the broadsheet collective's manuscript collection that we have. It includes these wonderful boxes of photographs, which were the kind of the file prints that they had from all the photographs that were published in the magazine. So there's, yeah, a number of amazing photographs from the time.
So how do people, if they want to see these photographs and they're sitting in their own homes, can they go online?
No, unfortunately. Unfortunately, they're not digitized because Gil's work is held at the Auckland Museum.
Oh, right.
And so we have these original prints, but her work is looked after by the Auckland Museum. So if they want to see the prints, then they can come and visit us at the Central City Library.
Yeah. Just go up to level 2.
That's right.
And ask. Yeah. And you may find Renee sitting at the desk. You may recognize
me. I
heard you on the radio. So with some of the articles here, we've got Rebecca Evans on her life.
Yep, that's right. So this
bad news in the budget.
Yep. So one of the significant things about this particular issue is that it contained part two of Donna Awatere's articles on Māori sovereignty. And this was a series of three different articles that Broadsheet published in this year. And they later actually published this as a book called Māori Sovereignty. And it was a pretty groundbreaking work looking at basically the experiences of Māori through colonization, and it created a lot of debate within the feminist community at the time, as everybody was really grappling with issues of racism and how to support Tino Rangatiratanga in Aotearoa.
It's nice to see these names. I can see here in the Broadsheet Collective some of this famous names that reverberate here. So we've got Sarah Calvert, Sandra Coney, Julie Downey, Sandy Hall, Heather McLeish, Miriam Safira, Doreen Suddens, and Renee Taylor.
Yeah, absolutely. And the magazines, they're such a treat to read. They're still so relevant, the issues that they're discussing, and really fun. You can actually read them. The entire Broadsheet archive has been digitized by the University of Auckland. So if you just go ahead and Google Broadsheet Magazine, University of Auckland, you'll find them. They're downloadable PDFs. You can read away to your heart's content.
Well, there you go. Even if we don't have Gil Hanley's photographs digitized yet, there's something else to explore.
Right.
And going into Central City Library, shall we just take a minute here? We've got a couple of minutes left to talk about what Can you take action?
Yeah, that's right. So all of these things I've been talking about today are all part of our current Heritage Collections exhibition, which is on at the Central City Library. So this is really the exhibition that we created, taking inspiration from the thousands of women, including those that we've been talking about today, and in particular the woman who signed the 1893 suffrage petition. So Why You Take Action is about taking action. So, for instance, signing the petition, that act might seem like a small act, but it created a big change. So we're on from now until November. If you're able to, come in and check it out.
Yeah. Central City Library. And the thing which really strikes me, I want to say, Renee, was that hearing about this material you've brought in is how long and yet also how short 125 years really are, and how far, but at the same time quite close, the event and its protagonists are to us. So we have a special treat here now to bring them even closer to you out there listening to us. It's a sound clip from the Auckland Library's Oral History Collection, and it features a certain Ms. Betty Cuthbert, who's recalling high tea with her great auntie Kate, who was Kate Shepherd, and reflecting on the influence that great auntie Kate had on her own life. So thanks very much, Renee, for coming in and bringing them closer to us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Well, we'll have you again. And now we're going to leave everyone with a very special treat, which is from our oral history collection. It's a clip of Betty Cuthbert recalling high tea with her great auntie Kate, who was Kate Shepherd, of course, and reflecting on the influence that great auntie Kate had on her own life.
Now, this is a recorded interview with Betty Cuthbert. The project is the North Shore Women's Suffrage Celebrations, 1893-1993. And Betty's story is about Kate Shepherd.
She was my father's great aunt, and she was known in the family as Great Auntie Kate. I have to admit that I was always rather in awe of her, but my clearest memory of Kate Shepherd are being taken by my mother, who went regularly, perhaps once a fortnight, I think it could be, to have afternoon tea with Great Auntie Kate, in which I knew when it was happening, because she used to make a Canadian date cake, which was Great Auntie Kate's favourite thing. And she still lived in her house in Riccarton Road, which at that time...
Riccarton Road, Christchurch.
Yes, in Christchurch, which at that time was painted, I think, in the original colour, which was a dark, rusty red. But I'm afraid if you drive down Riccarton Road now, you won't see it because they've built buildings in front of it. I can remember very clearly going up to the front door, which was covered with ivy, I think it was. And the afternoon tea was something that I think we only see on television now with... I know that she had a maid who brought it in, and there was always the teapot and the hot water jug. Particularly the teapot was a silver and sat with a little silver Metz burner, and with it at the same time came the cake stand with
the three cake stand.
Yes.
And I remember days like that.
You do, and I can remember my mother always telling me before I went that I was only allowed to have two things to eat, and if I took it, I had to eat it, even if I didn't like it. I wish now that I had asked Great Auntie Kate, when I realise now how famous she is and how people are going to ask us what do we remember of Great Auntie Kate. But being a small child of about 6 or 7, and possibly in those days, unlike now, unlike my grandchildren with their grandparents, I don't think we spoke unless we were spoken to.
No, we didn't.
And I think my mother and Great Auntie Kate did most of the talking, but what I thinking back now, to me it is interesting that it was me that went and not my brothers. And I wondered if perhaps this was Great Auntie Kate's particular interest in women, and because of course she had no sons of her own, and whether she, oh, I just don't know why, but she was on my father's side of the family. She was my grandmother Bevan's aunt. But the interesting thing was that when I was to go to university, and my mother said, Betty wants to go to university, and my father said to her, oh, what a waste of money sending girls
that was part
of the course. And my mother said, what would your great auntie Kate have said about that? And I didn't ever hear another word. I think also, when I think about it now, it was my great auntie Kate's philosophy that possibly permeated onto my mother, in that my mother always firmly believed that I had two brothers, that we were all to be treated exactly the same. And I can remember very clearly what they did, I did, and what I did, they did, and they also always did their share of the dishes and the housework. Mm-hmm. And I was totally unaware of this gender distinctions they talk about now. It never occurred to me that, I mean, I was never put down as a girl. I certainly went to Rangiroa Girls' School, and I don't think I ever met this sort of, discrimination against women until I became a school teacher. And now people in the past have often said at various times, why is it that my children are so, if you like, outspoken or feisty, if you like? And I've always said, well, perhaps because they were brought up in a house where people discussed things. But now I can say, because great, great, great aunt Kate Shepherd was their, you know, there was their ancestor, and I think it was part of her strong political sense that came through to me, not so much from my father, but possibly from the women in the Bevan family, because it was on my Bevan side of the family. And I realise now, this is it, and perhaps it gives me an excuse for standing up and saying my piece, but I do know that I have felt very strongly, particularly that's probably why I'm so keen on the Māori Women's Welfare League, is because I'm aware of the fact that for many women, they are second-class citizens in New Zealand. And this is perhaps one of the driving forces in my life when I think about it now.
This program was brought to you by Auckland Libraries. Find us online at aucklandlibraries.govt.nz and catch the program next Sunday at 9:35 p.m. on 104.6 FM or anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/books and beyond. Every day, every day, every day.